Hello. Welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa bringing you the News Gazette on this Wednesday, April 9th, 2025. Today on the front page, there's a large picture of a woman next to a sign that says, "Welcome to Mansfield." And it's with the title of "Mad About Mansfield, Town's First Elected Female Board President. It Doesn't Get Much Better Than Here," by Dave Hinton. From Mansfield, "No need to sell Dina Carrico on the attractive aspects of small-town living. She's a believer. Despite growing up in the big city of Champaign, Carrico wanted a slower pace when she got married to her husband, Robert. To paraphrase John Mellencamp, Carrico can breathe in a small town. So forgive the soon-to-be 64-year-old, the town's first-ever female elected village president, if she's smiling a little wider, walking with a little more pep these days. I just love our town," Carrico said. "I think it's one of the best small towns in the area. We're blessed. It doesn't get much better than Mansfield." Carrico handily defeated Michael Bain in April election to win the village's top seat. She succeeds two-term president Andy Steiger, who is moving out of the community. To acquaint herself with the workings of the village, Carrico ran for village trustee and was elected 2 years ago. "I chose to run for the board before I ran for the village board president, so you can learn how the system works before you can learn how to take over the world. You just have to know the process. You have to be able to follow before you can lead." For 7.5 years, she served as Mansfield's animal control officer and said that in 10 years, she had missed only one village board meeting, and that was due to a medical issue. The 32-year-old Mansfield resident said she has seen the village change quite a bit, mostly for the better. "There are a lot of young families moving in," she said. "A couple of years ago, we had more problems. Lately, we're getting a handle on some of that stuff. I would say 99.99% of the great people in Mansfield." One of the move-ins is Bridget Boynihan, communication specialist for the city of Urbana, who moved to Mansfield 8 years ago from Mahomet. She became acquainted with Carrico when Carrico helped her find her dog, Chewy, who escaped her house one frigid day after recently moved to the town. She was the animal control person and really did a good job with finding lost pets, feral cats, and the list goes on, said Brian, for whom Carrico's tenacity and positive attitude stood out. Among the issues facing the village is one of the hefty price tag, phase two of its water main project. "We put in an application to the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency to see if we can get some loan forgiveness for the water main project. It's a $7.5 million budget." She said last year the state forgave 70% of such loans. This year, it might only be 50%. The village has to replace one well and refurbish a second. It undertook a $2 million water main replacement project on part of the village's south side a few years ago. "We don't want to have to sell the water system to Illinois American Water," Carrico said. "We want to maintain our own system. It's just part of it. You have to maintain your utilities if you want to be an owner. All addresses are hooked up to their own septic system," Carrico said. "Building and maintaining a wastewater treatment system would be astronomical. We are working on some drainage issues where we do have some high water. It's much better than it used to be. It also employs two full-time workers for streets and water. The board has hired a new engineer and is looking into fixing chronic problems with our streets. The village employs one part-time police officer and would like to hire another part-timer." Carrico downplays being the first female village president. "It doesn't make a difference to me," she said. "The fact that I'm a woman doesn't change anything. It just happened that I'm a woman and I ran. Transparency, equality, and parity are what I believe in. And if Andy Steiger had run, I don't think I would have won." Carrico said the board has a great village board. Broyhen and Carrico is not just active, said Carrico is not just active in Village of Manfield matters. She organizes events, shows, and comes to everything and anything in town and never misses an opportunity to tell anyone how wonderful the village truly is. Carrico is a walker for exercise and hikes around the community daily. She will continue to serve as the office manager for the Baptist Student Foundation, which caters to University of Illinois students. She has held this post for 17 years. Also on the front page from the Urbana City Council, by Jana Wiersema, Hotel Royer anticipates a soft opening on April 16th. At long last, the former Urbana Lincoln and Landmark Hotel is on the threshold of reopening as Hotel Royer. April 16th is our anticipated opening date. Harris Purves, a part-timer with Icon Hospitality, told the Urbana City Council at its Monday night meeting. That's the date we've agreed to with Hilton, and that's the date we're going to be trying to open. He added that this is a soft opening, and a grand opening will be announced later on. Hotel Royer's booking website currently does not allow reservations for dates before April 28th. Purves said that in a previous interview that Hilton's practice is to make the first available booking date later than the anticipated opening to avoid issues if the opening date is pushed back. With the University of Illinois' commencement set for May 17th, the News Gazette did a quick check on room prices at the boutique hotel that weekend. For a single person or couple who wants to check in Friday and check out Sunday, two options are available: a king bed for $573 a night, or a queen bed for the same price. The following Friday shows prices of $216 per night for a king or queen bed, or $241 for two queen beds. I'm very happy to report tonight that the final certificate of occupancy has been issued for Hotel Royer, said Mayor Diane Marlin. That happened this afternoon, and they received their public health permit last week. Achieving occupancy is one of the requirements the hotel is required to meet in order to receive its promised incentive from the city. The council previously agreed to extend the occupancy deadline from December 31, 2022 to August 31, 2023, then to February 29, 2024, when aldermen voted in February 2024 to extend the deadline a third time to December 31, 2024. They also amended the agreement to include a penalty for every 3 months or portion thereof that the project extended past that date. $150,000 would be subtracted from the city's $5.5 million incentive for the project. As of this month, the maximum reimbursement amount is now $5.2 million. I was there today, Marlin said of the hotel. It's beautiful. Hotel Royer's liquor license application will be up for approval at next week's regular council meeting, with the mayor noting that the hotel will need its local license in order to apply for a license with the state. Also on the agenda for next week's council meeting, an amendment to the city's agreement with the Rose Bowl Tavern, which currently allows the business to use the east half of the city-owned lot at Race and Water Streets for programming from May 1st to August 31st. If approved, the earliest date the business can use the space will be moved up to April 1st. An intergovernmental agreement to use the library-owned lots at 201 and 202 West Green Street as temporary community activation spaces. If approved by both parties, the agreement would allow the city to install a shipping container stage at the northwest corner of Race and Green Streets to facilitate events, city staff said. The southwest corner would feature a large sign that spells out Urbana and a new community garden managed by Cunningham Township. The proposed ordinance creating new regulations for city use of surveillance technology will remain in the Committee of the Whole, with council members voting to resume the discussion on May 19th. And an article from the University of Illinois at the top of the front page gives the heading, Survey Says, for starters, U of I grads report 75 $1,373 as an average salary. Released Tuesday, the annual Illini Success Report, a checkup on how bachelor's degrees recipients from the most recent graduating class have done post-Illinois. Here are a few numbers of note that editor Jeff D'Alessio pulled from the 24-page study. 96,766. That is the average starting salary for Granger College of Engineering alums who picked up the working world over grad school. Per usual, it was the U of I college that produced the highest year one earners, followed by the School of Information Science, which was $81,891, and the Gies College of Business graduates in $76,560. 68.5 percentage of 4,142 respondents who chose a first destination job, grad school, or volunteer opportunity somewhere within the state of Illinois, 2,838, followed by California, 231, New York, 161, Texas, 67, Wisconsin, 63, Pennsylvania, 61, Missouri, 54, Georgia, 48, and Massachusetts at 48. Three employers with more than 30 Illini who graduated in August 2023, December 2023, or May of 2024 on the payroll. Amazon, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and the U of I. More than 900 alums chose to stay put for grad school, with 30-plus others choosing Columbia, Georgia Tech, UIC, and the University of Chicago. $20,000 is the median signing bonus of alums who majored in computer science to go with an average salary of $138,881, other majors hitting six figures in average pay, statistics and computer science at $153,500, math and computer science, $117,500, and computer engineering at $103,222. The last article on the front page has the heading, Danville opening likely in late fall. Ollie's Bargain Outlet by Jennifer Bailey. Those hoping for a quick turnaround for Ollie's to open in the former Big Lots in Danville will have to wait a bit. At this point, we expect the store to open in the late fall, according to Tom Kuypers, Senior Vice President of Marketing and Advertising with Ollie's Bargain Outlet. He said they expect to be hiring in the next few months. It's difficult to say at this point when we'll be recruiting, but it should be a few months before opening, Kuypers said. We typically hire about 40 to 50 folks for the opening. Our store hours are standardized and are 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Sunday. He said notification of the grand opening will be set as it gets closer to the date. An Ollie banner is already hanging on the building at 20 North Gilbert Street. The Bargain Outlet had been looking to open in Danville and scouted several sites, including at the Village Mall, officials said. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. in a social media post said the city has been working on bringing in this development for a while, but didn't know for sure until very recently. Vermilion Advantage President and CEO Mike Marin stated, I think it is positive news that Ollie's will be moving into the Big Lot space. Vermilion Advantage is happy that we will have a new business coming into town using that space. Ollie's recently announced the acquisition of more than 50 former Big Lot store leases from Gordon Brothers. It hopes to open 75 new stores in 2025. It currently has 568 stores in 31 states, including one in Champaign. Ollie's specializes in closeout merchandise and excess inventory. It offers housewares, foods, books, stationery, bed and bath, floor coverings, toys, hardware, and more. Let's hear from J. Mark Powell and his Holy Cow History. And there's a picture of a man who we will find out is Duncan Hines in 1948. Meet the real Duncan Hines. Supermarkets cake mix shelves feature the big three. There's Pillsbury, whose Doughboy is a cartoon character. There's Betty Crocker. Sure, her pretty face is on the box, but it's a portrait drawn from imagination because she's fictitious. Then there's the third brand. No cute mascot, no human likeness, just a simple name in a simple font. On the Three Daily, only Duncan Hines actually existed, yet he personally had nothing to do with cake mixes, cooking, or baking. So how did it happen? There was no reason to believe great things were ahead for the baby born in 1880 in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Hines's father was a Confederate veteran. His mother died when he was 4, and his grandparents raised him. A job with Wells Fargo Express Company sent him out west. Then it was off to Chicago as a traveling salesman for a printing company. To understand what happened next, you must first know what life on the road was like for a traveling salesman in 1910. It was a time before franchise restaurants and hotel chains. Each owner did their own thing. That made eating out a gamble. You never knew what you'd get. Hines's job kept him on the go. He logged more than 40,000 miles annually, the equivalent of driving across the United States 14 times. Naturally, he ate out a lot. Hines was a tough customer. He demanded spick and span, spotlessness, personally inspecting every kitchen, prompt, polite service, and above-average food. He began keeping tabs on the best places to eat and stay, making notes about each place's atmosphere and specialties. Friends began asking, "I'm going to Kansas City next week. Where's a good place to eat there?" The more he answered, the more they asked. By 1935, Hines had compiled notes on 167 restaurants in 30 states. To ease the growing request, he included lists of recommended establishments inside his Christmas cards. That he thought would take care of that. It didn't. He was bombarded with more letters asking, "I hear you've got a list of good places to eat. May I get one?" Hines started charging $1 a copy, hoping the hefty price tag, equivalent to about $24 today, would end demand. That didn't work either. When he had sold 1,000 copies, Hines realized he had stumbled upon a gold mine. So, in 1937, he self-published Adventures in Good Eating Places Along the Highways of America. It quickly became a bestseller. When Americans hit the road, his book was in the Ford or Chevy with them, and Hines was on the road to celebrity status. He updated it yearly. Consider this, from 1939, Corbin, Kentucky Sanders Court and Cafe, opened all year except Christmas, a very good place to stop. Sizzling steaks, fried chicken, country ham, hot biscuits. Did you catch the fried chicken? The Sanders referenced in the title was Colonel Harlan Sanders. The little restaurant was where he perfected his blend of 11 secret herbs and spices that eventually took Kentucky Fried Chicken worldwide. Could Hines pick them or what? It didn't stop with food. Next, he published a hotel guide entitled Lodging for a Night and Later. And then later, Adventures in Good Cooking. They were followed by a syndicated newspaper column and radio shows. What Hines decreed was good as gospel. How did Americans trust him? How much did they trust him? Consider this. A man in New England wanted to buy a farm in Kentucky, so he wrote a letter instructing Hines to buy the best property available on his behalf. And he included a blank check to cover the transaction. Hines returned it with a polite, "No, thanks, but thank you anyway." Hines never accepted free meals. Restaurants couldn't advertise in his books. Knowing Americans trusted his recommendations took its toll. A 1946 Life magazine profile noted, "Some of Hines' correspondents have grown to trust him so much that it makes him nervous. What you wonder, does all this have to do with cake mixes?" Hines' name was bankable. After World War II, businessman Roy Park partnered with him to create food products bearing the Duncan Hines title. First came Duncan Hines ice cream. It was an instant hit, not because of the familiar name, but the high butterfat content. that became the formula for future Duncan Hines products. They tasted richer than the competition. The first Duncan Hines cake mix made its debut in 1951. Bread and pancake mixes followed in 1952, and blueberry muffin mix came in 1953. In time, more than 250 canned, bottled, and boxed products bore the Duncan Hines brand. Hines returned to Bowling Green in 1939, where his quiet life belied his celebrity status. He died of lung cancer in 1959, 11 days shy of his 79th birthday, and he's still a household name today. Continuing in our communities, an article from Rantoul by Dave Hinton with the title, Renovation Turns Up a 1951 Time Capsule. Looking ahead also meant visiting the past at Rantoul Township High School when a time capsule was discovered due to new building construction. Superintendent Scott Amaro said the removal of the 1951 cornerstone revealed the time capsule. The cornerstone was in a spot that was going to be covered up by a new part of the building, Amaro said. It will be relocated to a prominent place at the gymnasium entrance, so it's visible. The 74-year-old time capsule contained 1951 and 1926 yearbooks and a letter from C.C. Condit, the superintendent when the 1951 gym was built. Amario said he doesn't know why the 1926 yearbook was included. Condit's letter was contained a history of Rantoul schools, some first public schools who some of the first teachers were, and when they would do major milestones like new buildings, Amario said. Included was information about a fire that destroyed a small school across Sheldon Street from the high school building in 1919. The west wing of the current high school was built in 1920 and refurbished in 2003. Amario said there are a number of familiar names to the Rantoul area in the 1951 yearbook, families who continue to live in the community. The capsule was in good shape, he said. Everything was kept nicely. Work continues on at the renovation addition at RTHS. They're laying the block for the foyer area. Amario said the office area on the first and second floor, they're muddling and taping all the drywall. Mudding. They sprayed a moisture barrier over the block. Once they get all the block laid, they'll put all the brick on the front. Construction is slated for completion by the start of the next school year. Phase two of the approximately $7 million project will cost about $4.9 million. The first phase was completed in the summer of 2023. Phase two involves expansion of the gymnasium lobby by about 25 feet to the north. The concession stand and ticket booth plus an elevator will be in that area. Offices and storage space will be located above the concession and ticket area when it's moved back to the north side. The basement portion of the building will include the elevator lobby and storage space. The second floor of the gym lobby will feature an open-air section, similar to the west wing foyer with a high ceiling. The project also includes expanding the east wing between 15 and 20 feet and adding a second floor that will include offices. The remodel expansion will result in an additional classroom. The expansion of the is driven by the need for more room as enrollment has climbed to about 856 students since the end of the COVID pandemic. Previously, enrollment hovered around 800. Phase one of the expansion renovation involved by the gutting and renovation of the front north lobby and the floors above and below, plus the addition of modern bathrooms. An article from Danville by Jennifer Bailey with the heading Opening tentatively set for April 28th, the new Sonic Drive-In in Danville. The new Sonic Drive-In in fast food restaurant at the northeast corner of Vermilion and Fairchild Streets in Danville has set a tentative grand opening date of April 28th. There will be a ribbon cutting at 10:30 a.m. on that day. Owner-operator Jacob Barnard said the weather caused some construction delays, but the new location is well on its way. As long as we go smoothly, we're all good to go, Barnard said about the April date. Sonic's normal hours will be 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. However, it will open later in the day after the grand opening ceremony. Barnard said that he and his partner held a second round of interviews for employees this week and are still in the process of hiring staff. They have scheduled one last day of open interviews from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday in the conference room at Mad Goat Coffee at 701 South Gilbert Street. 50 we'd be happy with, Barnard said of the starting number of employees. He said they're comfortably at about half of that number right now. Barnard has been general manager at the Jimmy John's on Fairchild Street. His partner, Patrick Wampler, who operates the Jimmy John's, is there too. Barnard said that they have been focused on Sonic, and he's not sure when the new Jimmy John's next door will open. Ground baking for both restaurants took place in October. I think it's going to be one of the best things in a long time that comes to Danville, honestly, Barnard said at the time. I think that Sonic is perfect for Danville. I love that we're right here in the heart of town. That's another great thing. It's going to help high school and help everybody, and it's just going to make everything feel uplifted a little more every day. The project costs an estimated $4 million. Jimmy John's will close its location at Gilbert and Fairchild Streets the day the new location opens, just south of the Sonic. Wampler of Champaign, who is a franchisee with Jimmy John's through Sub Wars LLC and an owner with the Sonic ABW Group, had said construction would take around 5 or 6 months, depending on the weather. He said a lot of the current 20 to 25 employees at the other Jimmy John's in Danville will be brought to the new location, but it will be a busier, bigger store, so they will probably add maybe another 10 employees. The new Jimmy John's will have newer and added equipment, more storage space, and a new layout designed to execute at a higher level, Wampler said. The current Danville restaurant was designed 10 years ago. The new Jimmy John's and Sonic will have outdoor patios and drive-thrus. Sonic has its traditional vehicle stalls, but is a newer, hipper design, Wampler said. It's their new, what they call, prototype, and it's very cool looking. It's a fun building, Wampler previously had said. At the busy intersection, there will be entrance exits off Vermilion and Walnut Street and an exit off Fairchild Street. A small insert in this section of our communities from Muhammad with the heading, Business Plans Keep Fast Pace. Don't blink or you might miss a new business going up in Muhammad. In addition to Rhino Ag, office personnel relocating there from Gibson City and plans for a Taco Bell to be developed on Patton Drive, it seems a new business pops up as often as spring dandelions. Village Administrator Patrick Brown said ground was recently broken for a Haymakers gas station at the intersection of Illinois 150 and Prairie View Road. Also, work continues on a new Starbucks at the corner of Eastwood Drive and Lombard, Illinois 47. People are starting to work on the inside, Brown said. It's across the street from Minute Mart gas station. One business has decided to relocate out of the downtown location. Officials with Chop House on Main announced last week that they decided to renew their lease on 401 East Main Street. In social media posts, the business indicated it was looking for a new locale. They want to open somewhere in Muhammad if they can, Brown said. Village officials have not been told whether there are any prospects for Chop House current space, which is owned by Nick Taylor of Taylor Realty, Brown said. This will include this half of the News Gazette reading for today, Wednesday, April the 9th, 2025. And I'll be back with the second half of the News Gazette. This is Lisa, and see you in just a minute.